It's Thursday, the 16th of July, and this is Israel in 10, the Misgav Daily Brief. I'm Laura Sellier. Getting Hamas to disarm is proving far more difficult than many expected. Why would a young Gazan hand over an AK-47 that's worth many thousands of dollars? Israeli broadcaster, IDF reservist and security analyst David Matlin has some answers. Hear our conversation in a moment, but first the latest. For a fifth straight day, the United States has been striking Iran, hitting targets around Tehran for the first time since this latest round of fighting began. In response, Iran has attempted to strike US military assets in Kuwait, Bahrain, Jordan and the UAE. India has instructed its ships to stay out of the Strait of Hormuz. President Trump says Iran is on the verge of defeat, while also insisting that Tehran is ready to make a deal. And Trump has welcomed the release of an American woman detained in Iran, calling it a gesture of goodwill by Tehran. The woman's been identified as 53-year-old California resident Dina Karari. She was prevented from leaving Iran after visiting relatives in Shiraz in late 2024. Her attorney says she's now safely on her way back to the United States. Iran has not publicly confirmed her release. Syria says it's intercepted a shipment of advanced weapons and missiles that were allegedly destined for Hezbollah after security forces seized the cache near the Iraqi border. It comes as Syria's new leadership steps up efforts to reassert state control, curb weapons smuggling and stabilize the country following the fall of Bashar al-Assad. The IDF has killed three armed Hezbollah terrorists inside southern Lebanon's security zone as it continues efforts to prevent the group from re-establishing a presence along the border. The military has also released new details of a major operation against Hezbollah's strongholds in Bint Jebel and Ennahda. It says it's destroyed more than 1,500 terror sites and killed more than 500 operatives. In Gaza, the IDF says it's destroyed four Hamas weapons depots and killed the commander of the group's sniper unit. At the same time, the International Stabilization Force for Gaza is taking shape, with Morocco confirming it has deployed troops to take part. And Colombia's incoming government says it will open an embassy in Jerusalem, delivering on a pledge by President-elect Abelardo de la Espriella as Bogotá moves to fully restore ties with Israel after a two-year diplomatic freeze. It's a dramatic reversal of former President Gustavo Petro's anti-Israel policy, and it comes amid a broader rightward shift across Latin America, with several governments drawing closer to both Israel and the United States. Before we get to today's conversation, a reminder, you can sponsor Israel in 10. Just drop us a line at misgavdailybrief@gmail.com. Now here's David Matlin on why disarming Hamas may be even harder than defeating it.
Let's start with what is quite an unusual situation for Israelis. They find themselves with war going on all around them, but it's not actually going on inside Israel. Just what does the security establishment say about how long that situation can last?
Well, you know, I'll start with the security establishment. I mean, they, of course, are being cautious, messaging to the public that they're ready for anything. We're at our highest readiness level, ready for all eventualities, and issuing statements of deterrence in terms of if anything comes our way, the enemy will be really sorry. So the security establishment is taking it very seriously and for all the right reasons. You know, as you rightly say, it's a surreal moment in Israel where everyone else is being shot at by Iran right now, except us. I mean, there were cluster munitions on Bahrain yesterday, multiple missiles shot at neighboring Jordan as well. So, I mean, Kuwait and the whole region has been facing fire. Not us, oddly enough. The ones who, you know, took out the Ayatollah are not being targeted in this moment. There appears to be a deterrence involved right now. As temporary as it may be, we all know this isn't over. There's a reason that Iran doesn't want to draw us back into the fight here in Israel yet, right now, or if at all. Those are all the big questions, because we have an entirely different target bank than, say, CENTCOM right now. We're talking leadership. We're talking sensitive, critical infrastructure. We've shown we're no joke in this arena and that we can get anywhere. So that's the calculation there. Also, I just want to add on the home front level, very edgy. You know, very edgy. Everybody's kind of waiting day and night, like, will we be drawn back into this? So there's an uneasiness around that whole situation.
Right. I think we've had our fair share of missile attacks
Yes.
To be honest, haven't we? But as you say, there is a deterrence element to this, because we saw that short skirmish between Israel and Iran a short while ago. Nothing was holding Israel back because it's not involved in the MOU. It's not involved in any ceasefire talks with Iran.
It was June 8th. I remember distinctly this one-day flare-up. To be full disclosure, and I'm an active member of the IDF reserves, my battalion was mobilized that morning. We got the emergency mobilization at 7 a.m. that day. We spent the day gearing up. An entire time they were sending us northward, and then it was all canceled that night when things calmed down and we all went home again, which was a surreal and new experience for me, even 20 some years into military service. But it highlighted the readiness, the new doctrines in place that are, hey, we jump, we don't take anything lightly, we're ready for any eventualities. There's a new doctrine at play here in Israel for any eventuality.
Let's talk about Gaza. The IDF has just eliminated another senior commander. The International Stabilization Force is taking shape, and you've got the EU poised to pour $1 billion into reconstruction. There is some movement, isn't there, with regard to Gaza. Can we expect a big announcement soon?
That's a good question about a big announcement. I think we're going to see a series of more minor announcements. There is a lot of movement. You're right. And there's a great framework in place through Trump's Gaza Peace Board plans. It's very in depth and in the weeds here about how this should happen, the steps that should take place. So there is a plan. We're behind schedule. Okay, but fine. Yes, there's a lot of movement still in traction on this front. It is not one that we should be pessimistic about, but I'll explain the complications, obviously. Yes. Look, there's never been a shortage of money, international money ready to be sent to the Palestinians or Gaza. You know, they have an entire economy built around charity and drawing in money. And certainly in this moment, as we're all aware, the international attention is at a fever pitch. Money is there. And that's a unique thing that the Palestinians have than arguably any other, conflict drawn people in the world, is that they have the world lined up to send them billions and billions of dollars if certain conditions are met. And that's the key right now, is what happens on the ground in Gaza. We had some Kosovan peace troops show up here in Israel this week too, I think a few hundred. So another sign of these international forces and groups that are ready to immerse themselves in Gaza, ready to implement a different reality on the ground. Yes. What it appears to come down to is there's a Hamas, and jihadi, Islamic jihadic terrorist organizations that still have guns, okay, that are still controlling certain pockets of the strip and certain streets. And their disarmament has been the crux of the issue when it comes to the Israeli discussion. Now, to just be fair and get both sides of this, some are arguing that, yes, it's Hamas. The refusal to disarm is the main issue, that they're holding up the process. You could argue that if these international organizations would put pressure on Hamas, and we did see the UN actually issue some rare statements this week condemning Hamas and how they're hijacking aid, and kind of maddening for us to see this is the theme of the whole war. The UN is saying this now, but there's that element that we're clinging to on the Israeli side, or at least I want to say the government here is clinging to, saying, hey, Hamas is holding this up. Until they put down their arms, we can't do anything. But on the other side of that coin, many are arguing that, look, it's Israel's intransigence on this issue that's holding up the issue. What do we expect to happen here? You're talking about a young Gazan guy who has an AK-47. That's a very valuable item at this point in his life. Not just protect his family and keep himself alive in this chaotic world he lives in, but his top three commanders have been killed throughout the course of the war. It's not very clear, this command structure. A guy like that is a hard sell to say, give me your gun, especially if it's a foreign group or the Israelis who are trying to take it from you. Not only does it have monetary value, it's good 8,000 shekels or so, this rifle in Gaza, just for example. It's worth money, and money's something there. But there are many arguing that it needs to be a Palestinian group, that there needs to be, the only way they're really going to hand that rifle over is not to an Israeli, not to some international group, but to a credible other Palestinian entity. So that's kind of the complicated moment we're in with Gaza right now. It's like how to proceed, how to disarm these guys in Gaza, which is the broad consensus by everyone involved that they need to go.
And just a word on the northern border then, because we've just had another round of talks between Lebanon and Israel, which is remarkable in itself. But is significant progress being made when it comes to disarming Hezbollah?
It is significant in terms of the contact that we're having with the Beirut government. This is unprecedented. The diplomacy is phenomenal. It's the best story going on between us and Lebanon in decades. So that is great. I guess you can say it is significant that we're engaged in this diplomacy. But what happens on the ground? I mean, that becomes the question, because it has to translate into reality. And we've yet to see concrete real success. This isn't the first time that Israel has gone into an agreement with the Beirut government. 2006 was full of UN Security Council resolution, things that mandated this to happen that really didn't happen. But there are some experimental things happening on the ground in southern Lebanon right now. The IDF is establishing shapes on the map. They're not, you know, squares or circles, but there's zones on the map that are being set up by the army, sort of test zones where they're saying, all right, look, we know there is Hezbollah infrastructure in here. We're on top of it. We're watching it. We could take care of it, or the Lebanese army can come in right now and sort of deal with this zone that we want to relinquish control of because there's no territorial aims here. It's a pure security stance. So there are zones being set up as test cases for the Lebanese armed forces to move in and see what they can really do on the ground, see how effective they are, because the infrastructure is immense. You know, we're finding underground bunker after bunker, unbelievable stuff. Investment is incredible on their side. So we'll see.
That's it. That's your Israel in 10. Thanks for watching or listening. And please do subscribe using the link below. Goodbye.